Sarah Jacquin is Director of the Jacobson Center for Jewish Medical Ethics, amongst other positions. He's been a close colleague of Rabbanim for many years and served as well as a personal physician.
Shes on the Rabbanim and my mother who's in the audience. I had a chill when I walked into the room, remembering all those tshuva drashas. I don't know if anyone else had that. That we heard from Avara in this room over, since I made Aliyah in 2001 for Amoni Stop, but Avara imploring us to do tshuva, those 2 hour tshuva drasha. I know we prepare every year to do tshuva drasha. As many of the speakers felt before, I feel totally inadequate to give a hesped for Avara. For a number of reasons, not the least is there's so many more Rabbeim here, Rabbanim, who spoke, like they mentioned on the internet, but also tonight, whether Kefet or Len Miller or Barnash, totally inadequate to say. But maybe I can have a little different perspective as a Bala Bias. Rav Aaron was also a Rabbein for us, Bala Batim, who did not go into Chinuch. And he had the same high standards for us as he did for all the Rabbein. The commitment to the Torah, to mitzvah, should be the same. It didn't matter. Rav Aaron took this all the time about what profession you went into. So maybe from that perspective, I can say a few words. I want to talk a little bit on two levels. I want to paint the picture of Rav Aaron, mostly for the young people in the audience. Most of the people know Rav Aaron pretty much like I was, just a regular Talmud of his, had some relationships on some different levels, but really was nothing special, what you said. But for the young people in the room, who Rav Aaron is, I could try to paint the picture. I want to talk from a Kali Yisrael perspective, but also on a personal level. So, a friend mentioned to me, this before I came here a couple of hours ago, that maybe what was downplayed in the Hesbedim was what a tremendous Talmud Chacham and Masmin Anak he was, what a tremendous Masmin and Talmud Chacham he was. And again, who am I to judge that? But I could tell you a little story. I hope people know who Rav Yisrael Zev Guzman was, especially if the younger people don't know, after Rabbeim, who he was. It's also a beautiful story about him and Professor Alman. When Rav Guzman was Menachem Avi, you can look it up on the internet, I suggest anyone. But Yisrael was just a Talmud Chacham, you can imagine. His Gaonos, he had wrote Shiurim, Rishimat Shiurim, everyone should just take a look at them. I mean, 100-page shiur on the first Mishnah in Kedushin, I mean, it's unbelievable what the man knew. So, one Beit Hazmanim I was learning in the Beit Medrash, which was my Chavrusa Ari Ackerman. It was during Pesach, in those days when we used to stay. No one dreamed of going home. We would go home and leave Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. It's hard to understand even who would think of that. And we were learning one Cholamoy, one Ben Hazmanim, and we're alone in the Beis Medrash. And Rav Guzman walks in, and he starts talking to us, and he asks where you learned. We say Shiva Har Tzion. He says, who's your Rosh Hashiva? So we said, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So I can never forget the expression that went over Rav Guzman's face, where he said, you have no idea what a Talmud Chacham and Masmid that man is. You know, I'll take that ticket to Olam Haba, if that's what they say about me, but those words of Rav Guzman. So if Rav Guzman could be made, that's a Raya She'ena Lav Yerurim, about what a Talmud Chacham Rav Aaron was. He could say a Shir B'in on any Sugyan Shas without preparing. I mean, I saw it in my own eyes. On Zerayim, Moed, Kachin, Taurus, things that no one learned. Every Sugyan Shas he knew had organized, he had it worked out, could say Shirim, and he did say Shirim on it. I mean, his weekly schedule, it's just unbelievable to imagine. He used to give 3 shirim a week, the regular shir, so his regular talmidim. He would give a kolel shir once or twice a week in another masechet, of course. Maybe he would also give a special chabura in Kachem or Taurus that people asked him for. If people asked me, I would do that. He would give a shir kolel once every 2 weeks that went for 2 hours. He would give, so that's just to start with his regular Gemara shears. Now, Friday is not a vacation day for him. He gave his regular Gemara shear and gave him a Machshava shear after shear on Friday. Either Avot Rabbi Natan, he particularly liked that, and Rabban LaTorah, and the Chazanish, and Muna B'Tachon. Those are 3 things that, for some reason, he repeated them. He really loved those 3 Svarim. He would do that on Friday morning, and we'd have to run to the bus. He wouldn't let us go to the bus. We'd have to stay in the Mishnah Shabbos. He was just there forever. So that was it. And then he went to Grus. And then he would give the call. After he would give a Shir Kolei Gush, that would end, start at 3:15, end about 5:30. He would go in the car, and he would run here. And
Some years I was so attached to him, I used to go with him to those shiurim, especially my third year in Gush, sometimes pretty much in the third year. And it was the days before there was the tunnel. And we used to drive in the car, and he would prepare the shiur. He asked me to open the svarim and then read from the Rishon. We knew exactly where it was. But just to remind you, he'd go around the curves of Dahisha and I'm reading the svarim. And that's how he's prepared the shiur. Now, then also, Rav Aaron never missed a shiur. I just have to say that again. I don't want to give musr to anyone. It's not my profession. He never missed a shiur. Just the story is, I was there that year when the Lebanon war. He got a call. He had to go to Lebanon at 8:30 on Friday morning. So he comes to yeshiva at 5 o'clock and sends people knocking on the doors. He has to give shiur at 5:30 in the morning. We can't miss a shiur. So we're all running up before we're like, what's going on here? He gets us up and he gives shiur at 5:30 in the morning. The helicopter goes to the army base and takes a helicopter to go up to Lebanon. That's good. And then there are Shabbos. Okay, so, I didn't forget. And Sunday, he gave a methodology shiur to the introduction. Who gives a methodology shiur to a Rosh Yeshiva? I never heard of that before. Gave how to learn Gemara to first-year students. I remember it was on, I think a different Masechta too, he would give that. So Rav Aaron was pretty much in every sugya and shas, every year, every other year, because he always was, teaching it. Oh, and he learned with his sons twice a week. The Divin Meir, so that's a different Masechta. I don't know. What's he learned? 15 Masechtas in Yisro. Again, if you do that every year, you're going to know everything, and that's what he is. And then Shabbos. So then, Rav Aaron came every other Shabbos to Yeshiva. Now, again, I could say whatever I want, because I don't have the field, but sometimes to get Rabbeim to come to Yeshiva, I see, it's like a little difficult. I know they want to leave their family. I can believe me, I wouldn't be the last to come, too. I would understand that. But he came every other Shabbos to Yeshiva. Not only him, his wife, his family. You know, it's to move your family every other Shabbos. So he would give a Friday night Sicha. Again, I don't know when he prepared for it. And then he would give a Sicha Chal Shos. And he gave a Shir. Now, Rav Amital sometimes used to let one of the other Rebbeim give the Shir. You know, Rav Amital did whatever. There was once a... not about Rav Amital tonight. Just a different time. But Rav Amital, he's the only one who... Rav Aaron would listen in, special relationship. Rav Aaron don't give the other rabbin to give a shiur. He didn't feel qualms about it. Rav Aaron gave the shiur. Now, what was the shiur on? So he learned Zrayim, he learned Moe, Nashim, and Zikin and Shiva. So what would he do? He'd give shiur on either Zrayim, this was either in the winter, it would be after Shabbos, and his family's all waiting around. But he's not leaving, he's giving shiurim. Or in the summer, it would be before Mincha. And he always, that was interesting, he ended up washing a lot after Shkia and Shal Shes. I remember in Gush, I never really understood because he always had to finish a shiur. He always had to go over time with the shiur. But he either did Sukkis and Zerayim or Sukkis and Chesed. But I didn't just tell you to be a good person. It was love to some Chesed. What's the nature of Kibbutz Avraham? What's the nature of Staka? I mean, the shiurim is on his book, Minchat Aviv. They're written, the shiurim. So that was his level as a Talmud Chacham, Anak, and Masmid. And he get off the plane. When he won't go home. He come right to Yeshiva. So he come get off the plane. So he had to make up all the shiurim, and he come to Grush sometimes. You know, for giving shiurim for 12 hours straight after coming off the plane, because he can never miss a shiur on a different sugya. So I don't know. I have no idea how he prepared. And also the Mar Makomos he used to give. Rav Aaron used to give his Mar Makomos. I remember in Gush, there was a little thermostat. I don't remember it was in Gush. He used to put his Mar Makomos on the thermostat. And he had to read them, and he had to run around getting the Sfarim, the Ravan, the Rav, before them, the Rav Yad, the other Shimon never heard of. Everyone had to buy them, of course. But we had to go and get the Sfarim. So that was his, the Mar Makomos. So I was there one year, we learned Shabbos, and I'm sitting here with the Mar Makomos from 10 years ago. And it was the Sugya of Boer, and it gives the same exact Mar Makomos they gave 10 years ago on people I never heard of, the Rav Yad, there was a Ruah. He's writing these Mar Makomos, and they say to the minutia of what time to start, where to start, the Dibur Maskil. I don't think it's the same thing he gave 10 years ago. And he can do that any Sugya and Shas. I once asked him when I was young and young and stupid maybe. I asked him once about Sadek Varalo, Rosh HaNetovo, theodicy, the question. And he starts giving me Mar Makomos on secular sources. The same thing. He says, well, you look in Brothers Karamazov there, and then you look in C.S. Lewis, The Problem of Pain. The same exact thing he did for that sugya. Now, Rav Aaron about Torah. Okay, so he was a Talmud Chacham Anak. He was who am I to say? Rav Gusman said, so I don't have to say it. But his special contribution was he built Torah in Eretz Yisrael. He built Lamdus in Eretz Yisrael. Without, again, I don't know what it was like before, but look how many of the Rosh Yeshivas are Talmidim of his in the Rosh Yeshiva Hester. Look how many Yeshivas fall on his way. He brought Brisker Lumdus and the higher level of Lumdus to Eretz Yisrael. We can be proud without Rav Aharon. You know, our world is a small world. We're very small, but because of Rav Aharon, we can stand with pride and say that we have Lumdus that's comparable to anywhere in the Haredi world. That's all too. To Rav Aharon. So that's his element of Torah. That was the focus of his life. That's what he loved to do. Just a couple other things that for Klal Yisrael, Rav Aharon, Torah Umada. Again, that was something that was part of him. That was something he believed in. Again, Rabbi Kefet said it. You know, how many times did he quote Milton, Shakespeare? He fundamentally believed there was value to be gained from the secular world. He was the example of it. His particular love of humanity has been expanded into all. You can read his essays on this. The idea that a Ben Torah in Eretz Yisrael can go to university is totally due to the Rav Aharon. That the idea that you can be a Maspid, a Ben Torah, and get up, who says that? Which other Rashiv in Israel that has the stature? I remember Rabinovich, Abdul Chaim Tovin. He's his contemporary. They agree on a lot of things. I have to mention a little different personality. But the idea that, and that's where students went. Now, he wasn't happy where all the men ended up. But the idea that he should go to university and encourage that was from Rav Aharon. You know, again, when everyone left, because they always used to talk to Rav Aharon, their plans, it was a long time ago when I left. So I went and asked him, you know, and I was struggling like everyone else. Should I go into chinuch or should I go into medicine? Well, me told me, he said, you should be a doctor. Okay, so maybe he knew a little bit about more than I. He loved medicine. That was really his only choice. You go into chinuch for it could be his medicine. That was for him. Because how can you do something that's not chesed or Torah? It was just inconceivable he would do that. The other idea, Rav Aharon's idea of machshava, to follow up on him. The thing that interests him, the intersection of Torah and ethics and morality. Read his essays, especially the younger people, they're difficult. But again, those questions, he was the person who dealt with them, the questions of Amalek and other issues of morality in Halacha. Again, he dealt with them and helped us answer those questions. Two other ideas, the idea of Torah study for women. Again, it was the Rav where it came from, but in this generation, it was on Rav Aharon's shoulders that when Migdal Oz started, again, but it wasn't Migdal Oz, wasn't the first one, but the idea, which gadol would you talk to? That, okay, women can learn Gemara, women can learn the same thing as men. It's Rav Aharon. It's all on his shoulders. The idea of how to learn Tanakh, the new way of learning Tanakh. Rav Aharon wasn't a fan of everything that went on, but in every book that Kush puts out on Tanakh, he has the first essay. Hizi Chasi, the idea of the way of learning Tanakh with a literary methodology. The first essay is Rav Aharon's lecture he gave in Stern College in 1962. And if it wasn't published, very interesting why it wasn't. So I just want to read these words. Rav Aharon wrote in the Hesped for the Rav, for more than two generations, it was the Rav more than anyone else who provided inspiration and an imprimatur, I don't know what that means, for the perspective and the group that attempt to bridge the gap between Torah and the general society and culture. Nevertheless, in regard to the core issues of principle, a link to the secular world and its knowledge, wrestling with its challenge rather than isolating itself from it, the importance of Zionism and the state of Israel, the Ruzal was a pillar of cloud and fire in his camp. Its votaries did not always understand his approach in all its complex balance. There is no doubt, however, that those who clung to him, the Ruzal was a mighty oak, a shelter and a fortress in the face of arrows of criticism and the venom attack directed against him, a large community of loyal, committed Jews. In his time and his place, he led and protected an entire camp, enabled to rear its head and maintain its spiritual stature. You could substitute Rav Aharon for the Rav, and you wouldn't miss a beat in that sense. And I think in David Berger's Hesped, I think he's going to reply, so Rav Aharon's irreplaceable. I know, no one's irreplaceable. We all feel, I think, that Rav Aharon's irreplaceable, who are in this camp and follow. There are always people, that's the greatness of the Masorah, there are always people who step up, and I'm confident they will. So I think that's Rav Aharon from a Klal Yisrael perspective. I just want to talk to Rav Aharon from a personal perspective, what it meant to be a Talmud of Rav Aharon. When I was deciding whether to go to Gush or not, I asked an older Bacher who learned in Gush, I think it was Joel Steinmetz, if I remember correctly, why should I go to Gush? So I thought he told me what a Talmud Chacham Rav Aharon is, when the mosque was, you know, you should go to Gush because you see the way Rav Aharon is mechabed his father and mother. That's the reason why you should go. And anyone who saw that can never forget how the way he took care of his father. His father was blind and very deaf at the end of his life. He used to walk with him and yell out shalosh, shtayim, how many steps his father had to go up. I remember waiting, kol nidre night, yeshiva, everyone was waiting in yeshiva, and the father would come up with his father and escort him to the front of the base medrash. And those scenes are inedible lessons that we all learned. I think everyone who saw that, something will never forget. So that was his kivud avayim. The second thing was his tefillah. He really felt that there was someone who was omeg lifnei Hashem in the midst of his tefillah. His tefillah on Yom Kippur. He was hunched over for hours during the. He would finish after Rav Amital was Chazaras Hashas of Musa. Rav was still saying, and his son once told me, why is Rav Aaron's Musa take so long on Yom Kippur? Because he was misfad on every single sin he ever did. He was choshes for those shitos that you have to be misfada on every sin. So he's remembering every single sin. Now the person who had the least sins, clearly, in that room, is the longest saying his Shmona Esrei. And again, I don't know how the person who was hunched over, I can't do it for 20 minutes, he was there for 4 hours, like that. And that's how he celebrates Yom Kippur. In the last years, I used to go to Gush for Yom Kippur. And again, I went to the shir, used to give a shir in Kashi, of course, on Vos Yom Kippurim, and everyone used to fall asleep. And again, the stories, he'd be the last one up. I used to walk home with him. Because I would stay in the base medrash, for various reasons, I would walk home with him, and Moshe, his son, would be there sometimes. And it was like walking home with the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur night. Rav Aaron wasn't in this world. He was in a different world. He was in the world of Os Yom Kippurim. And he's talking about Reb Chaim and the Briska Rav at these times. It was a different world that you were talking about. So that was his tefillah. The third thing is his anava that was just remarkable to anyone who knew him. I think on two levels. There was an intellectual anava. I once went to the press conference where a kefet mentioned, and someone asked him, why is the punishment for rape not so severe in the Torah, in Torah Shal Peh, Torah Shal Tav? And Rav said simply, ani lo yodea. I don't know. He was willing to say. He didn't try to rationalize. I said, I don't know. And there's other times I heard him say he was able, and he's strongly against Gedolim who weren't able to him, that bothered him a lot. But the second thing was his personal anava. I never saw a person with so much anava. We have to be mochel as a generation for how we treat Rav Aaron. I really think we have to. I mean, I would see him at the Kotel, walking alone. Now, if there was some chassidish rebbe come with a whole car and a thousand, he'd walk alone with his little bit of ass robe, you know, trying to climb up the stairs like everyone else. My friend Ari Akram told me a story. When Rav Aaron moved to lunch, he used to go to the barber in the front. And my friend walked in, and he's sitting in the chair for kids on a little stool. And it's like everyone else. Wait, like, what kind of world is that? And the Gullah door is sitting in his chair for kids. He wouldn't let anyone go in front of him. He wouldn't take any. My friend said, please go, go. He said, no, I'm going to wait on turn. He thought it was a novel verse, just a Torah. He once told me to cut someone else in line. Okay, so that was his another. We were all in awe of him, Rav Aaron, and it is just two sichot what we can learn from Aaron. Well, so two sichot that he gave that stand out in my mind. He talks about, and I'll just do this very quickly, I have a couple more minutes, that I hear it in my mind, Sifri Sugimantani's Esther, two of the sichot, when Mordechai comes to Esther and challenges her, so Rav Aaron says, he is telling Esther, know that your calculations are mistaken. Not only does your response exhibit moral and ethical rottenness, where Esther is scared to go to the king, but you are mistaken in the practical sense as well. Do you believe that everyone will perish and you will remain there in the royal palace just because you have succeeded entering the king's bedroom? Is that how you think God runs the world? Someone who avoids any responsibility, who doesn't care, who isn't prepared to risk himself, who gives his personal ambitions priority over his interests in the nations? Is that the person you think will survive, will be the one to succeed, with all value just disappear? You and your father's house will perish. And Rav Aaron says that applies to everyone in this room. You can't make your life based on your personal, you have to look what you can do for Klal Yisrael. So that was the first thing Klal Yisrael gave Matanis Esther. And the second one he asked, why were the Jews in Shushan? Why did they perish, the Jews in Shushan? So he said, the first, because they partook of the banquet of Achashveros. Here's Chazal Tanater. Okay, let's see what it says. As the story opens, we find ourselves asking, Rav Aaron asks, so I don't ask, what kind of world serves as this context in which social, ethical framework do these events take place? If we read the account carefully, the story seems to be unfolding in some surrealistic world where the regular concerns of a normal Jew have no place. In the society, no one works. No one's concerned to make a living. What are they busy with all day? This is what characterized this society. Okay, so Aaron was, at his heart, he couldn't deal with this. He was very strong against materialism, and that was the goal of people. It was, again, not the time, but he was very much a political socialist at heart. He couldn't understand. I tell me that we're not willing to share, and not willing to. But the idea of materialism, especially in the Western world, is something he couldn't live with. So those two sichot. When I came back to Israel, for various reasons, so we follow them to Eretz Israel. All the Talmidim here, and we all follow them to Eretz Israel. The main reason why so many of us are older here was because of Rav Aharon. We follow Rav Aharon here. So I got close to him for various reasons, and I was so, for the last couple of years, like the last 5 years, Rav Aharon used to give a small shiur Friday morning. And I used to always go. It was open for everyone, but very few people went for some. Maybe 10 people in the shiur. One Friday morning, I call him, ask him, is there a shiur Friday morning? Because he's the counselor. He says, yeah, there's a shiur, come at 10:30. So I said, okay, fine, come. I was waiting with the guard, and I ended up going. And I walk into the Moadon, that was at Gush, where you see the shiur, and he's sitting there alone. I said, well, man, what's going on here? So I go there, with Rebbe, what's going on? Oh, he said the shiur was canceled. So I said, well, I told you there's a shiur, so I have to give a shiur. And he gave me a personal shiur for 1 hour. Now, he gave me a shiur on the status of Leviah. Now, I didn't understand, it took me, as a little lady, like a Kohen or Yisrael, I didn't understand, like, why did that concern him so much? And so, one of them, I think Esti might have told me, that, first of all, the idea of Leviim really appeared to Ravon's heart, because Leviim are there to serve. That's the nature of a lady. So that really was important to him. And the second thing is, from a Lomda's aspect, this I realized later, he loved this hybrid kind of thing of a lady. Is a lady like Yisrael, they were like a Kohen. I didn't understand that, but now I understood why he gave that shiur. Home Rav Aharon every Friday, and we didn't just go straight home. We used to go in the shiur. We used to have to stop, and he used to buy flowers. He used to buy, and two bouquets. Now, I don't buy flowers for my wife. He used to always yell at me, go buy for your wife, too, flowers. And he used to go two bouquets. I think he told me once for Shabbos, and once for one for my wife. So he used to buy two bouquets, and he used to buy challah. He used to go buy challah. He used to wait in line, like everyone else, to buy challah. I used to also visit Rav Aharon every Erev Pesach. Because I used to go with my friend Ari Zivitowski, we used to bake matzah in Ephrat. And we used to go, Eric, visit him. So I used to go up and say hello to him. And he got older, he became a little less threatening, maybe because I got older, he got more approachable. I think people said that. It's funny, I never saw Ravon wasting time, I have to say that. You know, I never saw him not doing the mitzvah, either learning or running to do a mitzvah or doing chesed. People met, he never rested, he never relaxed. So, whenever it's funny, most times when I used to go see him in Erev Pesach, this was for like 10 years, he would be making sitzes. Yeah, for me, he would be making sitzes. I always wondered, is there a connection to Erev Pesach? Maybe, I don't know, but that's what he used to say. He used to always say, Rebbe, you want to come with us to make matzah? And Ravon had his chabur, he used to make matzah, machine matzah. He used to go to have a chabur with machine matzah. And Ravon didn't like change. He was a consistent, to the core, as opposed to the Rav, who people can look at it maybe a little different. Rav Aharon was consistent to the core, so he used to always tell me, maybe next year I'll come. And it's funny. And this Erev Pesach, I was debating when to go. This one ends with 3 points. Jonathan Sacks has this quote from Jonathan Sacks. This is how I sought God, not through philosophical proofs, scientific demonstrations, or theological arguments, not through miracles or mysteries or inner voices or sudden epiphanies, not by blind faith or existential leap, certainly not by abandonment of reason and embrace of the rational. These things have brought many people to God, but they have also brought many people to worship things that are not God, like power or ideology or race. Instead, I have sought God in people. People in themselves seem to point to something or something beyond themselves. Now, the Rav has a similar idea in the introduction to Halachic Man, where the Rav says, very well to Shah, what did Yosef see before he probably saw the British father? Rav obviously is referring when he wrote the book. Jonathan Sacks. So for thousands of us, Rav Aharon was that personality, that person we saw, that demut that was in front of our eyes. And Rav Aharon talks about himself. I don't have time to sort the faith itself. Rav Aharon talks about his rebbein being that person too. I remember Red Lamb and his hesped for the Rav. He quotes the pasuk of Elisha, who was accompanying Elio when Elio was going up in the chariot. Vayihema holchim holich v'daber v'nei rechad eish v'susei eish v'yavdersh neyem. Vayihema holchim holich v'daber. Elisha and Elio were walking and talking. Rabbi Lamb asks, why were they walking and talking? talking? What's the idea? Why can't we stop and talk? Rabbi Lamb gave his answer, and everyone looked at it as hesped for the Rav. I think there's a different answer, because Rav Aaron never stopped. If I can imagine talking to Rav, Rav Aaron never stopped. He would run. And Rabbi Willick, I think, said he would run like a fullback with his through the base measures, with his sfarim. He'd run like Rav Aaron never stopped. He was always in constant motion. I read Rav Chaim Dam Von. He said someone had to make an appointment with Rav Aaron. The important thing, he had to talk with him. So Rav Aaron looks at his schedule. He says, on Tuesday, I'm eating lunch. I eat lunch for 7 minutes. You can come talk to me while I eat lunch. That's our Rav Aaron, the use of time. That's when you can talk to me. And just the last point, the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvos quotes the Sifrei, V'shinatim levanecha, levanecha elo atalmidim, shal talmidim karabanim. That you're, it's very interesting, that the Hilchos Talmud Torah starts with Levi, but the Sifri says, why is it Seishanatim? Who are Banecha? Your Talmidim. Your Talmidim are called your Banim. So like many of hundreds of thousands of people, many of us felt like Rav Aaron's children. And I think there's something deeper here. For many of us, ended up loving Rav Aaron. It's something that's not, I think when we were young, we were in awe of Rav Aaron. But eventually, that turned to love. And I think he had that love back to us. I think we're able to feel it too. But that sense of love for a Rebbe, I think many of us felt that. And that's why so many people were Kari Kriya. I never saw so many people Kari Kriya Levaya in my life before. Not only because of their Rebbe Muvak, but in a sense because they felt he was a spiritual father to many of us sitting in this room. So I just want to say it was just an honor, pleasure, and again, the most profound experience of my life to be, even for a short time, Tom Ravaran and Yitzchak Rabaruch.